Hello everyone, I'm Asha Nayaswamy and I'm here to continue with you. We're talking about the caste system in you, and this is part two. A few minutes into it yesterday when I was trying to deal with these four stages of spiritual development, this is a continuation. So you have to understand that the caste system we're talking about is not the hereditary instrument of social oppression that people tend to think of it as, which is what it has become in the environment of India where it originated, but it's an inherited understanding of spiritual development that actually comes from a much higher age, in which it was not used as an instrument of oppression, but it was used as a way of self-understanding so that individuals could help know, both for society as a whole and for one person, to understand where I fit and what is the appropriate next step for me. A great deal of the challenge on the spiritual path, as I've been talking about in these conversations and in the almost 1,000 videos I now have on my YouTube channel, the spiritual path is about self-honesty and achieving perfection by the only method that we can reach, which is the way that a seed becomes a tree, which is it has to go through every single stage. And even if the potential to be a full-grown tree is in the seed cannot get to that potential except by crossing through every stage of development. So how the caste system really helps us is it clearly defines four stages of development, and none of us being cleanly one thing or another can see our motivations in different aspects of life and then understand how to rise above them. The four categories: morally asleep, which is the Shudra category, which is characterized, exemplified by the archetype of the peasant, someone who works physically, whose experience of life is material. The second is self-centered, which is exemplified by the archetype of the merchant. I will definitely give, but only if I get. And each of these has a basic attitude, a motivation for action, a response to suffering, and a way of conducting relationships. So I'm going to send you back to yesterday for the first two, and I'll refer to them, but now we're going to do the last two. And all realizing I have enough time, I can talk about this a little more. From the Shudra level, where the only motivation for action is fear of punishment. Now, again, I was pointing out yesterday, we can be very highly motivated in certain areas of our life and very poorly motivated in other areas of our life. Everybody has different realities. I've been working sewing face masks for people for the coronavirus and put out with my friend hundreds of masks to people who need them. I can get up early and work late to do that. Ask me to clean the shower stall, and it's just like, I mean, for me to get my energy together to do that, I really nearly have to be threatened with some kind of dire disease before I can go in and do that. I'm extremely Shudra when it comes to housework, but I'm not at all Shudra when it comes to sewing masks. So it's a very odd thing. And we have to actually sometimes set up the fear of punishment in order for us to be able to do it, because I know I won't unless the consequences are worse than the action itself. self-centered, which is the merchant class, where I'll give if I get. Sometimes that's the only way we'll do it. And I think housework, I think I can get all the way up to a Vaishya for housework, because I really don't like dirt and disorder. My tolerance is much higher than it should be for dirt and disorder. But now that we're sheltered in place, the housekeepers upon whom I have depended for the last 20 years, it's not so easy to bring them into the house. So now I have to, the motivation to actually not be living in squalor and disorder is balanced against my aversion to do it. And we're right on the cusp. We're just balanced right on the cusp. And I now have to push my way over it. But I don't have to do any of that to get up and make the masks, because on the level of making the masks, there's nothing in it for me. I'm not doing it to protect myself. But the knowledge that all my friends need this protection, I'm up early and I'm sewing all day and I'm sewing as late as I can in order to get it done. I'm driven to do it. And there's no threat of punishment, and there's nothing in it for me. You see how very just wildly different we can be about certain things? And so when we have these motivations, we understand what motivates people, how people see suffering and happiness in regard to that. Not only does it give us power to work with ourselves, but all of a sudden we can understand how to work with others. And when we motivate people according to what's important to them, our public school system is set up entirely, almost entirely, and I always get emails reminding me of exceptions, so I'll admit the exceptions. You know, Swamiji, when he would talk like this, he would talk sometimes in very broad strokes, and when I was in my 20s, it used to bother me, and I was always arguing with him about the exceptions. He finally got into a correspondence with a Christian, with an Episcopal priest. When Swami was writing a book about Christianity, he sent the manuscript to the priest, and the priest sent back a whole bunch of objections, basically saying for every, he called them generalizations that Swami made about what the basic teaching of the church was, there were exceptions. So Swami put it like this. He said, I'm not generalizing. He said, I'm talking about the essential attitude. And he said, of course, that there are exceptions to those, but the essential attitude, when described, gives me a point of contrast in which we can have a discussion. And this is one of the things that I know came up in one of these talks. It might have been in my conversations class. I was talking about a friend. Oh, this was the question about what's the difference between judgment and discrimination. That's what it was. And I believe it was my last Yogananda conversations with Yogananda class. And I talked about a friend who absolutely cannot call a spade a spade. They have to call it a farm implement with a long wooden handle. I said, but a spade is a spade. I mean, you know, that's an expression that means you even if it's an unpleasant label, you just call it what it is. But it's not a pitchfork. It's not a shovel. It's not a trowel. It's a spade. It is what it is. There's nothing inherently wrong with being able to name it. It's when suddenly we consider that all spades are inferior and all spades ought to be tossed into the incinerator and only an idiot would use a spade is when we get into a problem. But merely to name something is just to name it. And often it's necessary for us to understand where we want to be. We have to describe what some of the alternatives are. And it was very hard for me for many years with Swami, even though I myself was both very discriminating and very judgmental. When he would make these sweeping remarks, I didn't understand that he was trying to describe great flows of energy for the sake of understanding where we're trying to go. So that's what I'm doing when I'm also talking about this. So let me get back on the subject, lest we lose it. The third category of spiritual development, for having an English word, I call it truth sharing. The first is morally asleep, which is what would be called shudra. The second is self-centered, which is vaishya. Truth sharing is kshatriya. Kshatriya is the image for kshatriya is the warrior king. Now, in our particular society, the majority of leaders, kings, presidents, prime ministers, are shudras and vaishyas. They're either just completely in it for themselves and they're absolutely indifferent, or they've risen to the level of being self-centered. But there's very few, unfortunately, who are actually kshatriyas, which is they're principled, they are guided by high ideals, and they sacrifice their self-interest for the sake of the ideals. They sacrifice their self-interest for the sake of others. I mean, and that ideally is what a warrior king is. People think of a king as somebody self-centered with power, but a true ruler is the servant of his people. And he doesn't own his own life. His life is entirely owned by the people he serves. And there is no self. There is no possibility of self-interest because his responsibility is for everyone else. And a soldier, of course, trains hard, disciplines himself, sacrifices his own interests, and in the end is literally willing to give his life, to die for the sake of others and for an ideal. I mean, that is the opposite end of self-centered or indifferent. And most people who come, I mean, everyone who comes to the spiritual path is balancing, usually moving out of self-centered, moving into kshatriya. And then we still have to watch, because sometimes even on the spiritual path, we end up being selfish in the way we regard it. And it's a never-ending project to realize that there is no room for self on the spiritual path, that everything must be given to God. So the Kshatriya, this piece of paper, which is actually was created as a handout for a class, is now available online. You should be able to see a place where you can get it. It has the summary of what I'm describing. The Kshatriya is able to see a reality bigger than the small self. The Kshatriya begins to ponder the meaning of life. You see, the Vaishya doesn't bother to think philosophically. If I want it, I try to get it. I try to get it if I can. If I'm lucky, I get it. If I'm unlucky, I don't. If I die, I die. The Kshatriya begins to think, what is the meaning of this all? Where did I come from? Why am I fortunate and they are not fortunate? Is there no lasting purpose to my life? When you are a Kshatriya and you're with Vaishyas, the Vaishyas may be energetic, entertaining, you know, lovable, but they won't necessarily be philosophical, because they're living on the material plane and they're enjoying it. They're trying to make the material plane work for them. The Kshatriyas begin to understand that there's something wrong with this whole picture. And this comes from lifetimes of experience. The Kshatriya begins to discover that real joy is not in getting for myself, but in giving. And you see, the Vaishya discovers this accidentally. Just he may suddenly discover that because he has a lot of wealth, he can help other people. Maybe he first enjoys giving to his children, and then he enjoys giving to his mother-in-law. And then he discovers that his mother-in-law's neighbor needs something. I had a friend, actually, who was very well-to-do. He was in business with the product. I won't say, because I don't want to identify him. He was in business with a product that was useful to everyone, and it was a very expensive product. And twice, he gave me one of his products. And it was so funny to me. I mean, I loved it. It was very helpful to me, and it saved me a lot of money, and I was grateful, and for years I benefited from it. But I was very impressed by what he said. Gee, that felt good to give something away. Maybe I ought to do that more often. And I thought to myself, uh-huh, yeah, maybe you should. But it was fascinating to me. He was a very good man, honorable in every respect, but not generous. He took care of his own. But he discovered that when he stepped outside of his little circle, gee, that felt good. Maybe I should try that. And it's our experience that teaches us. I get enough for myself that I'm actually not afraid to give a little bit away. Then we discover that the joy of giving to others is just as great or greater than thinking about taking care of myself. And then after a while, that becomes second nature. And that's where the Kshatriya becomes the sacrificing soldier. It's the life in which I put aside my self-interest, live for an ideal, unite my energies with others to accomplish something great, is far more gratifying even than when I was enormously successful in just getting for myself. Nobody can persuade you of that. But once you taste it, because you see, the little Vaishya, who's always trying to make his world secure, I need more money, I need more security, I need more people, I need more power. But underneath it, there is always, even if you suppress it, there's always this great fear. Because we know that this world is extremely unstable and that it all could be lost in a moment. I mean, right now, we're in the middle of this COVID-19 epidemic. We don't know where it's going. When there was the recession, I don't know whether it was 2008 or when it was, I heard a snippet of a radio talk show about money. There's somebody on the phone, you know, my stock portfolio has gone down in so much value. Basically, who has that money? Where is the money? Like this. And the commentator, he said, look, I'll put it to you this way. I don't know what the number was, like $5 trillion of money has gone to money heaven, and it's never coming back. I mean, I don't understand economies. It's just gone. But I had it. It was mine. And now I've lost it. So the Vaishya, whose happiness depends on controlling the world, is always scared. Always scared. Whether they admit it or not, they're always scared. Whether they know it or not, they're always scared. And sooner or later, because it's a delusion, the delusion is broken, then you begin to think, but there must be another reality. Because at the same time that delusion is broken, this growing understanding comes. Or else you just go crazy. And I don't mean that saying that lightly, but you just become more and more tense and you live more and more incarnations in that suffering, thinking that your suffering is solved by controlling the world around you. So you have to learn that that's not true. So the kshatriya begins to know that in letting go of my self-concern and expanding literally my self-definition to everyone, Master said, when you can spend as freely and as joyously for others as you would spend for yourself, and what he says about how the joy that comes to that or how you become a child of God, but that's what he said. If I would buy it for myself, why wouldn't I buy it for you? What's the difference? And we can think of all the reasons why there's a difference, but many people just simply live like that. Or they live in a balanced way like that, buying for themselves when it's appropriate, but just as effortlessly and easily buying for others if the resources are there, if the inspiration from God is there to do it. So also, the kshatriya begins to think in terms of self-development. Not merely self-acquisition, but self-development. And the wealth of the kshatriya is the expansion of consciousness, the expansion of wisdom, the expansion of understanding. There's in many American, Native American traditions, you're respected most for how freely you give away what you own. And if you have accumulated too much, you're not respected by the culture. Why would you have gathered so much when so many of your brothers and sisters are in need? Greatness is defined by the freedom, and they would have these these huge gatherings in which everyone would just give away their things. Everything that had been accumulated, everything I don't need, I would just give away. And the joy would be of passing it on. It's just a whole different cultural way than our cultural way, as we admire those who get the most. And now we resent them. And I mean, it's craziness, but that's all Vaishya thinking, both to admire people who acquire and then to be mad at them because I can't control my environment because they have too much, it's their fault. The kshatriya thinks that I have to change myself, and the real battle is against the delusion that matter is the only reality. We have to fight the delusion of the Vaishya way of thinking that we've come out of, that my security is in the world around me. And we have to fight the battle to realize that my security is with God, that I must make my choices according to ideals. Yes, I could make more money if I did that, but would it help people or would it hurt people? But it's my money. I want that money. I need that money to feel secure. Yes, but what are the ideals behind what I'm doing? And what is the greater value to me? The Vaishya need to make the world safe or the Kshatriya need to make sure I'm acting according to dharmic principles, and that the real security is in the ability to choose dharma. So the basic attitude of the kshatriya, the basic attitude of the vaishya is what's in it for me. The basic attitude of the shudra is indifference. The kshatriya's basic attitude is, what is the truth and how can I serve? What is true and how can I serve? And then we don't ask, what's in it for me? We don't ask, am I jeopardizing my own security? We just say, how can I serve? And even, you see, on the spiritual path, we don't say, well, I have to have this, I have to do that. If I do these many kriyas, this is what I get. God will guarantee me if I do these practices. No. What is true? How can I serve? And above all, how can I serve? How can I serve God? How can even my personal spiritual practice just be a service to God, not a service to self? It's a very high attitude, but that's the kshatriya battle. That's why it's warrior, because we have to fight against this incarnations of delusion that says, I am a separate entity, and it's responsible to take care of myself. Now, you see, this is where it gets confusing, because the shudra, who's just so dull and doesn't put out any energy, advances to being self-centered. So there's even this memory that I can take care of myself. I can provide for my family. I can buy every one of my children a new car. I can do the down payment on their houses. You know, that's expanding a little bit from self, but it's still my definition of self. And we know that that was a good thing to do, and that was advancement. Ah, but now we've gotten really good at taking care of myself. Is there more? Can I go farther? And so we have to actually put aside that which was progress for us and realize, but there's nothing in it for me now. Now my growth is in a completely other direction, to realize that my response to suffering is we avoid pain by changing ourselves. We avoid pain by aligning ourselves with a higher ideal and finding our satisfaction, even if it costs us, you know, materially, financially, even it costs us relationships or even the respect of others. If we live in a time where respect is not given for the proper things, we relieve suffering by holding true to our ideals. And then, and by the corollary of that is that we recognize that when we betray our ideals, we suffer. So people watching from the outside, Vaishyas watching from the outside, Vaishyas watching especially from the outside, think there must be something in it for you. In 1976, when much of Ananda burned, and it turned out that the county was responsible, a faulty county machine was responsible, meant for starting the fire. Many of our neighbors sued and got a lot of money from the county. And Ananda, who'd been hurt more than anyone and literally could have gone bankrupt, we didn't sue. And Swami wrote a long letter, which we printed as an advertisement in the local paper. We're not suing because he didn't use the word karma, but he said, this is our hard luck and we're not going to take our hard luck out on our neighbors. We belong to the county. And we never did sue. And much of the county assumed that we'd made some kind of a backroom deal because they just couldn't conceive of the fact that so much money was ours for the taking, but we weren't going to take it because to do so would violate other principles that we had, and we just didn't do it because where there is dharma, there is victory. So a lot of times, there's a lot of money on the table, and you think it's just fine to take it. I'll give another example. Once our publishing company, Crystal Clarity Publisher, was oddly, I say oddly because now it's so common, we were the first ones to come out with these little gift books of aphorisms on spiritual principles, what at that time was called New Age spiritual principles. And our gift line was really, really popular, and we were selling lots of books. It was really the golden calf. No, that's the one that the Israelis worshipped. The golden goose, that's the one I mean, that was just really funding us. And we had a couple of distributors who'd been really loyal to us, who'd really helped us. And our salesman was solicited by what was the equivalent of Costco. It was called Price Club at that time, but it was the equivalent of Costco. They wanted to distribute our books. They wanted to distribute this line of books. And it was a huge deal. But they wanted an exclusive right, which meant we had several distributors who were also now riding the coattails of our success, and it stuck with us before we were successful, and we would just have to cut them off. You know, they were banking on our success, but we would just have to cut them off. So our book salesman was talking to other professionals unrelated to Ananda at the book fair, and he asked them, what should I do? Every one of them, their first question was, how much money would you make if you accept this deal? And because there were a lot of zeros behind it, it was a big sum of money, they said, well, of course you should do it. And our salesman listened, and after the third one, he finally realized what they were actually saying to them. If the price is right, sell your integrity. You have a promise to these people. Those people will be really hurt if you cut them off, but you're going to make a lot of money. You can't turn down all that money. So we did. Because where there is dharma, there is victory. It's just as simple as that. And that's what it is to be a kshatriya. I am not afraid. My suffering, I alleviate suffering by holding true to my principles and controlling my inclination to be self-centered. The relationships, the characteristic relationship of a kshatriya we would call synergistic. which is self-giving. It's the fulfillment that comes purely by loving and doing what's morally and spiritually right for yourself and for the others. That doesn't mean you allow yourself to be a doormat. You hold to principle. But you hold to principle rather than self-interest. The kshatriya relationship is we trade. You know, you depend on me, I depend on you. The shudra relationship is parasitic. What can I get from you? I don't have to give anything, just what can I get? The vaishya is willing to trade. I'll take out the garbage if you do the laundry. You know, I'll walk the dog if you'll clean the bathroom. You know, poop, we always keep it even. The kshatriya just says, how can I serve? How can I serve? But if the partner or the relationship is out of integrity, the kshatriya does not hesitate also to stand strong on principle. It's a very important point. Now, these are big challenges. This is what's being asked of us. Now, the last fourth caste is truth sharing, which is the Brahmin, which is the priest. Not the worldly-minded priest, but the true priest. For the Brahmin, matter, he does not identify with matter at all. Spirit is the only reality. He finds fulfillment through attunement to higher consciousness. His basic attitude is, what does God want? When Mother Teresa was praised for serving the poor and doing all this great work for the poor, Mother Teresa of Calcutta, she looked at the journalist who asked the question. She said, I'm not serving the poor. I'm doing what Jesus asked me to do. You see how hugely different that is? Mother Teresa was the most altruistic, self-sacrificing person of our era. She electrified the whole world with her selflessness, serving the poor. But she wasn't serving the poor with a vaishya attitude that she needed to take care of the poor because as long as people were suffering, she was suffering, but not in an altruistic way, but I need to control my environment. Many people who are trying to change the world, it's notable, are doing it with anger. Or they don't have peace because it agitates them. The world has to be different for me to feel safe. It motivates them sometimes to do good things for the world, but they need to elevate their motivation. Mother Teresa was a Brahmin. If Jesus said, forget the poor, I'll take care of them, Jesus saying, she would walk away and never look back because she had one dedication, and that was to doing what God wanted, and her only fulfillment was in harmony with that. She's motivated by the desire to do God's will. Not even principle anymore. It's just whatever you ask of me. It's not even necessary to think what is the principle because the relationship is there. God is my own. Jesus walks with me. The response to suffering is there is no suffering because suffering implies that we want things to be other than they are. And if this is God's will, why would I resist? That doesn't mean we don't take action. Mother Teresa was intensely active for God. She poured her life's blood out to the assignment that was given to her. She was totally committed. But whatever God wants, this is what I do. And the relationships are absolutely selfless. This then is the fourth and last stage of the soul's long journey. That's what we say in the Festival of Light, that we give ourselves completely for the sake of others, because there are no others. Self, others, God. That's the Brahman state. And that's where we're all heading. That's where our greatest joy lies. And that is the end of the journey. And if we haven't reached that point, the journey isn't over. I often comment, and it comforts me, if this isn't the happy ending, then it's not the ending. It's just the page turning. So the story can continue until we reach our divine home. God bless you.